Welcome to AMAT's Transportation Talk, a podcast that focuses on transportation happenings in the greater Akron area. In today's podcast, I talk to ODOT District 4 Capital Programs Administrator Chad Rudd. We discuss current projects in greater Akron, the State Route 8 bridge replacement, and an autonomous future. Welcome to another edition of Transportation Talk. I'm Curtis Baker, Director of AMATS, and with me today is Chad Rudd. He's the ODOT District 4 Capital Programs Administrator. And Chad, welcome to our little podcast.
Thank you very much, Curtis. It's great to be with you here today.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you. And I think today, what I'm hoping to talk to you a little bit about is sort of those big ticket projects that we're seeing around the greater Akron area. I think, you know, when you speak to people who either work downtown or live in the greater Akron area, they're seeing a lot of orange barrels. And a lot of those are a lot of different projects, but some of them are definitely major ODOT projects. And I thought maybe we could start off by just talking a little bit about sort of what you guys are trying to do on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis, sort of to make sure that this system runs and runs well for us.
Yeah, so our system, ODOT District 4, is made up of Summit, Stark, Portage, Mahoning, Trumbull, and Ashtabula County. District 4 has an annual budget of approximately $100 million. And one important thing to recognize with our budget is 90% of our budget is preserving what we have at District 4, meaning we're not going out there and building new interchanges everywhere. We're not going out there and putting new lanes in everywhere. Most of what we have is preserving our existing system. As far as what you see out there, yeah, we do understand we see a lot of orange barrels right now. We view this as a positive thing. We view this as a thing where we can continue to make the drive for our drivers a seamless drive. We understand there's some hiccups, but ultimately our feeling is once we get these projects done that it'll be better for the driving public.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I always observe is sort of that we're at this age with a lot of our infrastructure, especially with the roadways, I-77, I-76. These are old highways, right? I mean, they're some of the oldest in the state in terms of the major interstate system built in the late 50s, early 60s. So it only seems natural, like at some point, you have to pay the piper for that maintenance. And I think that's a lot of the gist of what you guys are doing right now.
Absolutely. That's what you're seeing. Even when you do see us on some of these larger projects where we're adding lanes, oftentimes, most of the project cost isn't to add the lanes. It's actually to repair the pavement that's been in place, like you said, for such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, too, obviously, the safety component of a lot of this, because these things were built so long ago, I don't think they ever intended to carry 100,000 cars a day or something like that. And so I guess that kind of rolls into some of the projects I wanted to talk to you about, specifically the main Broadway project on I-76, 77. It's been going on, it seems like, for a couple years now. I'm kind of assuming we're in the home stretch on that one. What can you tell us about that and where it's at right now?
Yeah, I would say we're in the home stretch. We're basically 90% done with the main Broadway project. Just to give you some dates, the project actually started in July of 2016.
Wow.
Recently, we opened up the Route 8 southbound to 77 northbound or westbound ramp there. Mm-hmm. So I know that's been exciting for the Akron traveling public to be able to utilize that again.
Right.
I think another thing that'll be exciting is the Main Street to westbound 76 is scheduled to open in the next few weeks, hopefully by the end of December. Mm-hmm. So
We're almost there.
So that puts us into next year. Next year, we'll basically do the surface level asphalt course. We'll do some bridge painting, some bridge sealing, and just some general cleanup of that job. And our estimated completion date for the project to be out of there is July 31st of next year. So once again, we're excited. We think it's a good project, and we're excited to see it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even for us driving through it, you know, whenever we're trying to get through the area, right now it has felt like there's a lot of confusion, or it's like, wait, which way is open this time or which way isn't? And then obviously you guys had the Kenmore leg closed as well for a little bit. I would never, ever say Akron area ever experiences Carmageddon or anything like that, because we typically don't have major congestion. But I think around that Beltway project, we continue to see a lot of different things going on, trying to get it up to speed to where maybe we don't have to touch it for another 15 years.
Yeah, that's certainly our goal. The main Broadway was, we got to do a lot. We, you know, on the Kenmore leg, we basically made it three lanes in each direction. Mm-hmm. The reason we did that is knowing that we were shutting down different legs at different times, we had to increase the capacity along the Kenmore leg. I think we learned some valuable lessons while doing that. Now, speaking of the Central Interchange and the Beltway in general, we would like to be done with it as well, but at the same time, we do have a major project coming up here in the next couple of years where we're going to redo the flyover ramps on the Central Interchange, so mainly 76 westbound to 77 south, and then the 76 eastbound to 8 northbound. Mm-hmm. Both those ramps are being done. We made a determination that the Akron traveling public has had to deal with a lot over the last few years, so we decided to also do other parts of the Beltway. Mm-hmm. You know, the concrete pavement, like you said, it's a very old concrete pavement on the section of 77 South, or the east side of the Beltway, or the south leg, however you want to call it. And then the north side of the box, or the west side, we decided now is a good time to actually do that work as well. So realistically, through 24, 25, there will be work in that area.
Yeah. And I guess speaking of concrete, jumping onto like the next big job is the Route 8 from Graham Road up to State Route 303. You know, this really has been the first construction season, right? They got under, I mean, they did a little bit of work last year, I think, on the berms, but this has really been the first major part of it. I got to see a lot of concrete get ripped off that roadway. How is that progressing, and are you guys on time with that? And I think everyone agrees that it needed to be replaced.
Yeah, we are on schedule with the job. The job is progressing nicely. Kenmore completed the inside lanes in this construction season. Now, to be honest, if you had followed our website and what we had put out, we had initially planned on, once we finished those inside lanes, to reintroduce three lanes of traffic in each direction through there through the winter. The only issue with that was there would still be a barrier in between, let's say, your two northbound lanes and then your next northbound lane. And we started talking with Stowe and Hudson and those areas, and there seemed to be, everyone was a little more comfortable with the idea of, it's functioning now with the two lanes, let's not introduce that, I'll call it the contra flow during the winter, just with, you know, the snow and ice removal, if there is an accident in there. So even though those lanes are done, those interior lanes are done right now, we're not going to open those in the winter unless we have an accident. And then we're going to have the ability to basically
really open it up.
Yep. And open it up and let cars get out of an accident in that area. But overall, the project is going well. We're on schedule with the job. You know, with the way we have to phase the job, it is one of those jobs that's going to take a little bit more time with construction wrapping up in 22.
Right. So when you think about that job, and it's just kind of interesting, I think, when you look at, you know, how traffic has been operating at two lanes of traffic versus three lanes of traffic. And honestly, you know, it seems like, and for me, I'm always going reverse, or I'm going, I think, opposite of the major flow. But it seems to be doing okay if you're heading towards Akron in the morning and heading home, you know, going north in the evening. But the other way seems to, I think you really see where that capacity that's lost is making an impact on drivers pretty much on a day-to-day basis right now. It seems like it's slowing traffic down quite a bit. And I think also because of what's going on in Cuyahoga County with 271 and all, you know, everything can kind of trickle down all the way pretty much to Akron.
Yeah, absolutely. I think seeing the two lanes in each direction, you do see the necessity for that third lane through there, specifically in the times you're talking about. I am fortunate myself as well that I come into Akron in the morning and I leave Akron in the afternoon, so I can see it as I'm driving, but I'm not necessarily in it. When we did first start construction, though, you know, you always have that adjustment period. Mm-hmm. And early on in the project, even going northbound in the afternoon at some of the ramps, Graham Road, you still had some backup areas. What's been really good, though, is the cooperation with the police departments through there and getting out there and just having people go the appropriate speed through there. It's not always intuitive, but going an appropriate speed actually makes you get through there faster than if you think, oh, I'm going to fly through here at 65, 75 miles per hour. So once we got those people to make the adjustments, and I'm sure some people change their routes in general, I think it flows about as well as you'd expect.
Yeah, no, I agree. And actually, it kind of gives me to a segue that I hadn't really planned on going to, but it is sort of thinking about safety and thinking about, especially on construction zones. I mean, obviously, you know, you guys want to protect all the workers out there. You want to protect the motorists that are out there. Just from my observation on a area like that, I've been impressed or just interested in seeing how well people seem to react to the speed signs. So that's the signs that are radaring, not ticketing, but radaring and basically posting, this is how fast you're going as you're coming through there. For me personally, I find myself that even if I see it coming up, I'm like, oh, I don't want to be the guy that looks like he's going 65 in this construction zone when it's 55. Overall, throughout maybe the state or throughout the district, your district, do you find that that's become a more effective way to potentially reduce some of those speeds, or are you doing any data analysis, any radar to see, you know, what is the average speed through there in a construction zone?
Yeah, we as ODOT, we have not set that up to do radar to come back and just look at that general speed. We have had locals set up their police departments mm-hmm. where they go out there and they give us that information. You know, the section of 76 through Norton where they did introduce some speed cameras at one point in time, you know, and they got to see how fast people really traveled. Ultimately, that's probably a hard sell most of the time to set up the speed cameras. I think people mostly just think we're setting up speed traps and just as a money grab type thing, even though I'll be honest, that's not what it is.
Right.
You know, like I said, we understand that if you're going the appropriate speed, not only does it probably get you through there faster, it actually gets you through there much safer to get home to your family and then the workers there. And I don't know if everyone has a full appreciation of what it feels like to be standing on a highway with a vehicle going next to you 65 miles per hour. It is something that you'll never forget as you're standing next to that wall or you're on a bridge. I mean, the bridge moves when it goes over. So, you know, it's just important to slow down in those areas. It's important to pay attention when you're on the road, when you're in those areas. It's you should never be texting and driving, but when you're in those construction zones, and oftentimes we have 11-foot lanes with 2 or 3 foot offsets to a median shoulder or a hard shoulder, you really need to pay attention in those areas and be safe.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the messages that I think we've even heard from the ODOT director and from others is just that, you know, when you're driving a vehicle, you have a lot of responsibility, and you have to take that responsibility seriously. And when I think about ticketing and things like that, when I'm talking even about the speed cameras, I'm not even talking about the ticket. I'm just saying letting people know, hey, this is the speed you're going, because I think – in a way, I almost think there is a good level of public shaming going on. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be the guy that's you know, being a jackass, essentially. And so, you know, I think that's just something that we'd like to see more of an emphasis on, and not just in construction zones and definitely through our urban corridors, is just getting people to pay attention, especially when there's bicycles, pedestrians, and all sorts of other activity than just, you know, you and your car. So, jumping around a little bit back to projects, let's talk about Barberton a little bit and the Barberton Interchange, State and Wooster, the reconfiguration, also with the Amazon facility that's going to be off of Romig Road, which is actually very close to there. What can you tell us about how that's progressing right now and what you think the end result's going to be? I mean, do you think it'll fundamentally change how people access Barberton from Wooster and State? You know, how do you foresee it kind of playing out in the long term?
I think it'll be a benefit to the area. I think moving the ramp further to the west along there benefits the overall traffic. That's what our study showed us. Just its proximity to where the other merge points are. By moving it down here, I think we'll definitely have a benefit. I don't see anything really that will adversely affect anyone. You still have easy access to both State and Wooster roads. So I do think it'll be a benefit. As far as the Amazon facility, it's interesting because it was probably, a little over a year ago or something that we became aware that there'd be an right. Amazon facility. And a year ago, I couldn't sit here and say that there was an Amazon facility right. coming in. I knew what right. it was. We were basically asked to sign, you know, some confidentiality right. type things. It had a whole different name, but we've actually been working real closely with them to determine what their needs are, mm-hmm. you know, knowing where they're going to be accessing the highway at Vernon Odom and here at this right. new interchange mm-hmm. that they're going to be accessing. What impact would it have on our project? Did we have to change anything? And we actually did have to come up with some changes. So, for example, the ramp going east to 76 eastbound, we actually had to open that up a little bit to allow dual lanes on that ramp. The bridge, the State Street Bridge over 76, we've actually changed the lane configuration on there, and we're utilizing the entire width of the bridge there to add an extra through lane, essentially, which overall helps with the traffic. But it was kind of exciting mm-hmm. working through there. Right. They've been a great partner to work with throughout the process. As far as where we're at schedule-wise, yeah. though, you know, right now we're working through some utility issues. We really didn't get a lot done during this season, yeah. and we really yeah. didn't expect to get a lot done. Some of the first work that's going to be done next season is they're going to do the work on State Road for that. And then the eastbound on-ramp, we expect to be open by mid-2020. And then the eastbound lanes will be constructed in 2020. And then the westbound lanes in 21, with the entire project hopefully done in 22.
Yeah. So that's a pretty good schedule, I think. I think you're going to start to see some changes relatively quickly.
Yes.
Within the next year or so. So that's exciting. The last project I thought we could talk about a little bit is probably the one that I think is going to be the most interesting to the motoring public. And that's the State Route 8 bridge over the Cuyahoga Valley. You know, this one's been in the works for a long time. We're talking well north of $100 million bridge replacement. I think what everyone would really like to know is, how is this going to affect me and my access to Akron, especially if you're on the north side? And it sounds like there's a lot of innovative things and innovative thought between how you're going to construct that bridge, how you're going to maintain traffic. Just walk us through that a little bit in terms of the time frame and what you expect.
Yeah, the beauty of this project is the new bridge we're building. So the first thing we're going to do is build the southbound lanes, so it'll be on the west side of the existing structure. So while we're building that bridge, we're offline. Mm-hmm. You're just going to see us building a bridge right next to there.
Right.
And the new bridge, in each lane, we're going to have four lanes in the direction. But by the time you take into consideration what your shoulder widths are, it's going to be a wide bridge. So as you're seeing this bridge in the southbound direction get built, you're still three lanes in each direction. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to have a major effect right. on the motoring public there.
Right.
So now once we get done with that structure, we can come in, shift all the traffic onto the new structure
right.
and still have three lanes in each direction while we're demoing the old structure. Mm-hmm. You know, we complete the demo of the old structure. We build the new structure for the northbound traffic. And then once we're all done, right. we flip it back over. Now, there will be some inconveniences at some point in time with each side of the structure. We have to do tie-ins
right.
to the
right.
existing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we will plan that accordingly.
Right.
We won't do that during rush hour traffic, hopefully. I can get in a little detail here, but we have things called the permitted lane closure chart,
right.
which tells us at all times how many lanes we must maintain
yeah.
on a road.
Mm-hmm.
So we follow that. And Route 8 is a route where you have to have two lanes at all time, no matter what.
Right.
I mean, you can't go down mm-hmm. to one. So I don't think this project will have as much impact as, say, some of the other projects
right.
you've had in the area. As far as innovative, what we're doing that I think is pretty neat from an engineer's standpoint is we're using a construction method called jacking.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can envision building the piers up to their height, and then instead of a crane picking up the beams and setting it on top of those piers, there will actually be a hydraulic jack mm-hmm. behind where the bridge is that will push the beams out. And the beams will actually elevate in the air on an angle. And then as they get closer to the pier, you'll see them drop. And then they literally drop right on the pier. So it's a pretty cool thing for an
right.
engineer. I think it'll be neat for your regular traveling public. Although when they're traveling, I just want them to pay attention
right.
to their
yeah.
driving.
Yeah.
What we've done, though, is we understand, we think it's neat. It's not done every single day. So we're actually setting up cameras, one on the Y bridge.
Oh, cool.
And then one down low, most likely on the bus garage, that will, for 24 hours a day, you'll just be able to watch the construction and be able to monitor it. You know, we have a lot of really interested people in that job, on that job. So they're going to be able to watch the progress.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think that bridge. Now, right now, what is the time period for that? When do you think... when do you think everything would be done?
Yeah, so the project's $130 million. We're using a pot of money called Major Bridge Money, and we were initially planning on being out in construction this coming up year.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed a little bit from a money situation. Right now, we're seeing the earliest we would be out there is in October of 21.
Okay.
Is when we would start the job. Once again, we have the plans ready. We're actually filing the plans either this month or early next month. So we'll have the plans ready. It's just from an overall funding standpoint, $130 million is a lot, of, lot to bite off. So right now we're looking October of 21 through most likely the end of calendar 2025.
Yeah. Wow. Which is incredible. I mean, so that'll be almost about a four-year project.
It's a four-year project.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, again, it's exciting. And I think with that one, it is one that I think most of us can just sort of watch get built and not have it affect us in a, you know, sort of traffic capacity sort of way. So that should be fun.
And another thing with that project is, we realize this is a once in a hundred year project that we're building here. So we wanted to see, can we do something different with this project? Can we make this a project that the people of Akron are going to drive through years from now and say, man, is that's really cool. I just had that drive through Akron, and you go home and you tell your family about it and you tell your friends about it. So
did you see that bridge? Did you see that? Exactly.
That's what we were trying to do. So we've introduced some aesthetic elements to the project that we think are going to really stand the test of time and stand out for the city of Akron and for ODOT and for this area in general.
Right. All right, so we've talked a lot about roadway projects, and obviously, I mean, that's, I think, essentially what ODOT does. That's their bread and butter. But I think, you know, in the last, I mean, especially in the last 10 years, but I think even evolving over the last 15 to 20 years, has been this interest in active transportation and the idea that, hey, not everyone either wants to drive a car or should have to drive a car to get everywhere they need to go. And I know, you know, for ODOT and for other departments of transportation and MPOs even, I think there's all been, all have had growing pains in figuring out what that really means and where each agency's responsibilities lie to make that happen. So I kind of just wanted to ask you about sort of how have you seen it change since you started at ODOT? And I should have mentioned you worked with the city of Akron even in the mid-2000s, so you've kind of seen it from that urban perspective. But how do you think we're doing a better job? Do you think DOTs generally, nationally, are doing a better job in terms of thinking about that those bike and ped responsibilities that we have as basically transportation planners and engineers?
I think we are doing a better job. That's not to say I think we're 100% there yet, but I think we're doing a better job. Understanding our system as ODOT and what we maintain and what we traditionally do, obviously the interstates are ours. Usually you don't have a lot of ped bike interaction with the interstate. Now, an example of where we are going to have a little bit of interaction between ped bike and interstate is the Central Interchange project. So as part of that project, there's currently a bridge on La Follette that goes over 76. That will no longer be a bridge that cars go over. Mm-hmm. Now, we understand you're cutting this bridge off. You're cutting people off in a way.
Right.
For cars, we believe it is easy to get around. There's other ways around there. But we are building a ped bridge in its place that I think will become part of a future trail.
Rubber City Heritage Trail.
Yes, the Rubber City Heritage Trail that then can be incorporated with that. So to get there, you know, we worked with the City of Akron. We worked with the Ohio and Erie Canal Coalition Group. We worked with AMETS on the different partners on what needed to be there. So we do look at it. And then the other part that we do most of our work in that people don't realize is we work in the townships right. on the state routes.
Right.
So oftentimes, townships on state routes, they're not your big urban centers, your big urban cores where you see a lot of walkers.
Right.
Once again, it's not to say there's not walkers in some of these small little towns right. that pop up or townships that pop up. So we are taking a look at it. When we look at our projects on those routes, we specifically look at, do we see a history of people walking? Do we look on the side of the road and do we see goat paths?
Right.
You know, if we see goat paths, we know there are people walking. So we're starting to look at it more. Where we see the need, we're putting in sidewalks. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the signalized intersections. If we're seeing those walkers, you know, putting in compliant ADA ramps, putting in push buttons,
right.
ped heads, all those type things. So recently, ODOT has taken up the... where we're taking the lead on creating a state and federal bike route system.
Mm-hmm.
Often, many of those are on our actual state routes. So I think you're getting more people to come around to the idea that it's just not all about the cars.
Right.
We're coming around to that idea. So I think we're making progress.
And in all honesty, too, I think the urbans and the urban communities are ahead of the DOTs in that. I think, especially like the larger urban areas like Akron, Cleveland, et cetera. But I think it's interesting, too, because we see a lot of discussion and debate about, you know, oh, somebody did this really cool thing where they painted this intersection mm-hmm. or they did this and, you know, that's really innovative in Norway or mm-hmm. and... typically, it seems like the response a lot of times from the urbans is like, oh, like, well, we're not allowed to do that. The feds say we can't do that. Or, you know, ODOT would never let us do that. And I think sometimes you guys play the almost get pushed into that role of the bad guy of enforcing things. But I also get the sense, too, that that's sort of changing this idea of not that every design exception needs to be made, but, you know, areas where I think you guys see when the urbans and the local communities want to do something, kind of trying to be that more supportive. I know I'm thinking about in Canton Road in Springfield where, you know, they really wanted some of those aesthetics, some of the bike and ped facilities that, you know, I almost think if it was 10 years ago and they would have asked, the answer would have just been no. Mm-hmm. And now the answer is, well, hey, let's work on this together, which I think is a big positive step.
It is, and it's important for us to try to look at things through other people's point of view, not just our ODOT, sometimes get cars through their point of view. And when a township does come to us and the villages do come to us, we absolutely listen. And it's not our position just to say no. You know, we mm-hmm. want to try to work with different folks to figure out what can we do to make it better for bikes, to make it better for peds, to make it safer for all the users. I will say that. And that's something I've tasked our staff with is, hey, don't always come up with a no. There are some things that we can just say no to.
Right.
You know, you brought up some of these intersections where you get in a crosswalk and they want to paint a view of the ocean with whales and sharks going through it. And it looks beautiful. But ultimately, when the feds come down and say, you cannot do this or we will withhold your funding, our hands are tied at ODOT.
Right.
We have to give the no answer. But if it's a reasonable thing that, you know, maybe it's a little innovative, maybe it's something we at ODOT haven't done before, let's take a good hard look at it. Let's look to see where it's been done and did it have any benefit.
Yeah. And it's funny. It reminds me of just when I was working on carpooling rideshare stuff, I mean, probably in 2008 or so, we wanted to put OhioRideshare.com on highway signs and post them throughout. And the initial interpretation from the feds was, well, you can't put a website on a sign. You know, there was something about the distraction of reading a website. And again, it was like one of those things that I remember my initial reaction was frustration. But then you realize a lot of times you just have to work through it because eventually those signs got up and they're still up now. You know, and it was a worthy cause, but, you know, I think even from the federal perspective, sometimes the technology is moving faster than they are, or the ideas are coming faster than they can even handle them. And no decision is just made in a snap judgment sort of way when it comes to federal highway, which I think, you know, but sometimes it can leave you, I think, hitting your head against the wall.
Yeah, there are times the feds certainly take their regulations very seriously. We did a distracted driving corridor in Mahoning and Trumbull County along Interstate 80, And if you've ever driven through there, it's basically advising the drivers to not text and drive. We have some signage along there that, as you read the signage as it goes, it says, "This may be your last text," or something like that. So, we actually touted it. We were pretty happy about what we did. Ultimately, though, the feds came back and said, "You have non-compliant signs up, and we will be taking those signs down." Now, there's still some aspects to the distracted driving corridor that we're keeping that are compliant, but certain things that we did that were a little bit of different, I think they call them Burma Shave signs, those are actually coming down. And one of the feds' big thing is just, driver expectation and not having those, they call them, I guess, a distraction in some cases. We have a local right now that wants to do some painting and different things under a bridge, which we're amenable to and we're probably going to be good with. But what we've said to them is, we're going to see what you want to put under the bridge. Because if a driver's going down the road and you're drawing a mural and they're trying to look into someone's eyeballs to that level of detail, that means they're distracted. So it's, yes, you can make it look pretty and nice, but yet not be distracting to someone.
Yeah, and it's funny, it's frustrating because sometimes it's like we have no way really of keeping people off their phones and being distracted. But even though that might be where 80% of the distraction is and 20% might be the mural, it's like the mural's the thing that doesn't happen. And we can't stop we can't stop the texting and driving. And I think especially, 'cause I even remember, I think it was in Columbus when they had those big billboards that had like the Mini Cooper that was on the side of the bill. I think at one time that was an issue because there was a concern that that was distracting people looking up at these giant billboards when other people were saying, like, this is city art, and eventually the art won out in that case. But I think actually it although it could speak to our cultural consumerism, etc., but I think it gave Columbus sort of a little neat cachet that they, of kind of looking different than the average city. So I guess to wrap up, Chad, thinking mostly about and looking into the future and looking into, the 10, 15 year, where is ODOT going to be? Where are we going to be as an AMATS, as an MPO? But talking about some of those things that we're seeing now, whether it's electric vehicles, when we're seeing the influx and use of Uber and Lyft, and then obviously eventually, although I think it might be a little slower than some people think, the autonomous vehicles and dealing with that. Do you see any way that it could possibly change your job 10, 15 years from now, especially most specifically with autonomous vehicles? I think if it really did come to that full autonomy, I think we would be our work would look so much different than it does now.
Yeah, I agree. I do think there's a potential to substantively change the way we work. To in the autonomous, in just what you hear, the capabilities that they may have someday, the ability of two vehicles to communicate to each other and drive literally a foot or two apart. You think of that impact on what it can have on just overall congestion. Two vehicles being able to travel that close together. Now you don't, that's too close. You would never want someone to drive that close. You want them to be 50 feet away. So to be able to, if you could get those vehicles that close, I think the impact it could have is in the future, you wouldn't see congestion projects. You wouldn't see adding lanes to projects. You might see the exact opposite. You might see us coming in and reusing part of the road that we used to need to drive cars on, and maybe it becomes something where we can do more bike ped friendly things. So, I wish I had a crystal ball and could look 20 years down the road to see if all this is really practical, how much of this is really going to happen. I feel something is going to happen. Whether where do you whether or when you get to 100% autonomy, I don't know. That's a tough one to answer, but I do think it'll change things
And
forever.
I think we're already seeing this, in the adoptions in the new vehicles. I mean, even some of the pedestrian collision stuff that they've put on there, although it hasn't shown to be overly effective. But I guess, when I look at this stuff, some of the things that concern me about it, and this is almost even in the way that we tend to show these futuristic utopias of, like, I feel like all the images, there's never people on the street. The cars look very futuristic and cold and sterile, and this idea of, you know, yeah, cars could be 2 feet apart. Well, then it's like, well, then how do you cross the street? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you do? And that's one of the things that I wonder about as we move forward on this is, you know, it's like the vehicle has done already what you could argue has done so much damage to the urban fabric in terms of over the last 100 years, you know, who did the right of way belong to versus now, you know, before we had this sort of mass auto, kind of auto-centric culture. It makes me wonder, you know, I guess my hopeful side is that that actually could be, you know, in the long run, better for bikes and pedestrians. And like you said, create that extra right of way. But then my other concern is like, we're just getting even to that more of like, you don't interact with the, you know, you don't interact with anything around you. You're in your bubble. You go from point A to point B. And then where the hell do we put these things in the meantime? So, because no one's going to pay to, you know, I mean, in a way, could it open up land use where you don't have the parking garages that we have now? But then on the flip side, where the hell are we going to put these vehicles that, you know, because not every single one of these vehicles that takes us to our job is then going to be used during that 8 hour period because, you know, I mean, 80% of the population's in the labor force and, you know, is working at some point. So I think there's a lot of unintended consequences that could really be interesting and potentially major altering of the environment as we know it.
Yeah. And when you go to these conferences and you hear the talk of autonomous and you hear the talk of the fleet vehicles and you hear the talk of the way the car manufacturers are looking at transportation different over the next 20 years. One of the popular things they talk about is you have this vehicle that you basically drive to and from work every day. Mm-hmm. You park it in your parking lot all day long while you work. You come home and then it sits in your garage most of the time. Now we go out and we get groceries and we go out to eat and we go shopping. Right. But for the most time, our vehicle is not moving.
Right.
So if we get to a truly autonomous state, does it get to the point where you and I no longer own a car? We right. own a service.
Right.
So the service every day comes, picks you up for work, maybe takes you to the bus, or maybe right. just takes you to work. And then it goes and gets Johnny or Shelly and takes them to work, and that's right. just what it does all day, and it comes and picks
right.
you up.
Could it actually be a de facto ride-sharing service? Although,
exactly.
You know, yeah, I mean, and quite frankly, too, I think it's going to get a lot messier before we get to full autonomy. I think, you know, when we had the fatality in Arizona with the pedestrian, I think, you know, it concerns me that, like, I think the urban environment's so much more dynamic than, say, getting on the turnpike and going from Cleveland to Toledo, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, we can get a truck going straight, you know, with decent weather between the one place to the other. How it really functions when we get into this type of urban environment, I think will be really interesting. And in a way, you know, I think it could either sink it or if it gets through it, then I think, yeah, we'll be close to that 100% autonomy.
Yeah, absolutely. We as a district, we actually took about 4 or 5 employees down this week and we went to the Transportation Research Center on near the Honda plant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we mm-hmm. went down there.
Is that the one where they have the little model city or the
absolutely
little,
yeah. yeah, they've set up just mock cities.
Right.
They've set up mock intersections, mock roundabouts. They have people jet out in front of cars. They have
yeah.
dogs jet out in front of cars. They have all these scenarios where a signal malfunctions. For whatever reason, mm-hmm. it goes double green.
Right.
What happens? How
right.
do these cars react? Do the cars see it?
Mm-hmm.
So they're testing all these things right now, and they're just in that testing
right.
phase. You know, like you said, there was the accident in Arizona where a pedestrian was hit crossing the road in this in a dark type setting,
yeah.
but that happens. That happens in real life.
Right,
people
right.
cross, you know. Hopefully we as a driver, we see them and we don't hit them. You know, the challenge of when you do get these autonomous vehicles, the ethical standards you have to build into a car on the decisions it has to make on do I
right.
hit the car ahead of me
right.
or do
left,
I veer to the
right.
left and hit
yeah.
the 5 people walking on like
right.
there are some legitimate hardcore decisions that are still being made with autonomous vehicles and how they're going to operate.
Right. And who gets to make those decisions too, right?
Right.
Which is another interesting thing. All right, well, Chad, I really appreciate the time, especially on the update of the projects and, you know, talking a little bit about some of those other fun things that we can look forward to. But you want to leave us with any other thoughts about where ODOT is right now and what you're hoping to achieve here in the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think ODOT's in a real good place. I think we're going to continue to do what we're doing and use most of our money, for 90% of our money, towards preservation. You know, with the, we didn't get into anything, but the gas tax that did pass, it opened what we call our TRAC, Transportation Review Advisory Council. It opened that back up to allow us to do some larger projects. One of our future projects coming up is the section of 77 just north of the Fairlawn area up to the turnpike. We're going to be adding a third lane in each direction through there. So I think from a, you know, we talked about congestion. I think that's going to help out a little bit. We're excited by that. We're looking at right now, we're actively looking at State Route 8 through that central interchange location. You know, as you come down through 8 there, two lanes go south.
Right.
You really probably need a third lane through there from, once again, a capacity standpoint. If you are coming south every single day, or me as I go north and look over to my left, there is a backup every single day that, you know, sometimes goes into Cuyahoga Falls. We're trying to address that right now. We're excited about some of the things that we've been working with our consultant on, you know, some of the ideas that they have. So we're excited by that. And I think we just continue to look to try to make the roads as good as we can for the traveling public.
Excellent. Well, Chad, again, thank you. And thank you to everyone that's listening. And this is, that'll end the show for today. Thank you.
Thank you.
To AMAT's Transportation Talk. Keep an eye out for additional content by following us on Twitter at AMAT's Planning and AMAT'sPlanning.org.